passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Ohm Times, where we're saving the world one ohm at a time. This is our first broadcast in the month of April, and that in the year of 2019. I always like how they say in the year of our Lord, 2019, like 2020 years ago, it wasn't the Lord's year. Maybe it was the lady's year. Maybe it's time to be in the year of Our Lady. I kind of like that.
I think well, that's blasphemous. How dare you?
Then I definitely like it. If it's blasphemous, I'm all over it. Hey, there we go.
Yes.
Talking about a good time. And as you can hear, in the first Thursday of the month on the Dr. Kevin Show, we always have our regular, none other than Matt Connerton and Matt Connerton Unleashed. Matt is the founder of IPM Nation. He is a five-day-a-week radio show host on WMH. I just blew it again, didn't I?
WMNH.
He's got a radio show. WMNH. MNH.
Yes.
M&M. There's an M&M there. Does he rap? I'm just curious.
No.
So 4 to 6 drive time show that you can catch there. And you can also just get him at IPMNation.com, where he has several shows that he does, that he produces. And he has an internet TV station, which he has the Dr. Kevin and Friends channel on. So Matt, we always try to put stuff through a spiritual lens. We missed last month because there was a blip in things, and last month didn't happen. So we've got a lot of catching up to do. For those of you who may not have joined a Dr. Kevin and Matt Connerton show, we do tend to bring some politics in because I think that politics is something that spiritual people actually need to talk about and participate and understand that the energy of apathy is not the energy of enlightenment. The energy of being better than is not the energy of enlightenment. The energy of having your head as an ostrich into the sand and saying talking about politics is not spiritual is not the energy of change, nor is it the energy of enlightenment. It's kind of the energy of idiots. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't say that on air. Matt.
Oh, my.
So,
yes.
We've had a lot of things going on in the world of politics since we've had you last on. And what do you think? And I think I've fallen in love with a new candidate, by the way. We're going to get to that.
Oh.
There's love in the air. So, of all the things coming out, you know, a lot of my listeners don't necessarily listen to a lot of politics or seek it out, and you always are good for a deep dive. What do you think has been the most need to be discussed in an actual real way instead of sound bites that's gone on in the last month or two?
Well, boy, I mean, you know, that can be a difficult question in these times that we live in, because it seems like there's always so much going on. But if I had to pick the biggest, most important story right now, I think it's the Mueller report. Are we going to get to see it? Is Congress going to get to see it? Is the White House going to have a chance to just edit it to the point where, you know, there's barely anything left of it before anyone gets to see it? Is William Barr protecting the president by kind of spinning Mueller's report as being no big deal, because now it's leaking out that there's members of Mueller's team who are saying that Barr really kind of undersold the whole thing? You know, and of course I have Republicans calling my show saying, oh, you know, it's time to just move on from this because Trump has been completely exonerated. You know, just ask him. And it's like, no, actually Mueller, in his summary that was provided, said something about, no, Trump actually is not exonerated. Maybe he didn't do anything criminal, but he's not exonerated, or, you know, nothing criminal that they could prove, but he's not exonerated. I want to know exactly what that means. So that's really become, I think, the biggest issue happening right now. But as I often say on my show, sometimes it's difficult to know where to even start, because it's an embarrassment of riches in terms of all that is happening politically and all that can be talked about in the Trump era. I do think another big story happening right now, and, you know, maybe we'll get to it later if you want to talk about it. But the other thing that's really been on my mind is the state of Trump's mental health. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the clip of him repeatedly saying oranges when he meant to say origins, and then being confused about where his father was born and all that. I think that is also a very big story, but I think the biggest thing right now is Mueller.
So how many, you know, you're better at this stuff than I am. I try to look at it and I understand it, and I am not as much of a political creature as you are. Though I think I may be catching up. I'm not sure. I think you're rubbing off on me, Matt. So how much rights do the House have in demanding that they see? I mean, is there a legitimate, can they force the issue? Or are, you know, one of the things that really amazed me was that we were talking about security and potential treason, and for all of the making fun of Trump's legal team, they managed to make sure he never actually testified.
Right.
And, you know, which was a big win for them. Because I don't think anybody in Trump's world that spends any time with him that has any concept of reality is not picking up on the fact that he is not mentally stable. I mean, this mentally stable issue is showing up more and more as this pressure gets greater. But it was a master stroke on Trump's team to make sure he never had to answer questions.
Oh, yeah.
That weren't, you know, sanitized. So,
yeah, that would have been disastrous.
Oh, God, yeah. So how much power does the House actually have? Can the House do this?
Well, they can. I've actually been a little bit confused about it myself, but they have the House Judiciary did authorize a subpoena for the full report. But I think the problem is, I mean, I think they will get it. But, you know, how much of that is Barr going to be able to redact, and will he be doing so in a way? I mean, look, obviously some redactions will have to be done. You know, you have to, although I prefer the least amount of redactions possible, because I'm a transparency hawk. You know, I want as much transparency as possible. And I understand the need. Sometimes, you know, you have to protect people's privacy and so forth. But I am so pro-transparency that in the tension that exists between protecting people's privacy and being transparent, I tend to prefer to err on the side of transparency. Some redaction will be necessary, I'm sure, for security reasons. I mean, that's a reason why you have to do that, a valid reason why you have to do that. But what I'm worried about is, you know, is Barr an honest broker in this? Or is he? Because, again, we're already hearing things leak out from Mueller's team that, no, Barr kind of really underplayed how damaging this is to Trump, which makes me a little bit suspicious of Barr. On the other hand, in Barr's defense, it is worth pointing out, Democrats used to be pretty fine with William Barr, you know, before he was nominated to be Trump's AG. You know, there was a time that Democrats liked him, respected him just fine. But I am, I don't trust anybody in this process. I mean, like I said, I'm a transparency guy. I think I lost track of what your question was. I kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent there, I think.
Well, that's okay, because I think that there is a general confusion. So, first of all, there is some GS-15 level clerk or manager or supervisor or data entry person or somebody who has read the whole report, but the head of the House Judiciary Committee is not cleared to read it. What is wrong with that picture? You know, this is, this is, you know, because you know that it wasn't like there wasn't some staff involved, that this was getting typed in and that it was getting produced in, and that there are people in the judicial thing who have much less clearance in a way to that report than an elected official that runs the House Judiciary, when even what Barr said, you know, what he was willing to share, said it didn't exonerate him. I mean, this is part of what the House Judiciary Committee is supposed to do. So we know that's a load of bull crap to say that the top person of the judiciary. Now, maybe they need to sit down and agree to the redaction, that we need to trust that person. But why is that person less trustworthy than the attorney general? The attorney general wasn't elected.
True.
He doesn't. He wasn't elected by the people.
Yeah. But there's also this question, too, about the White House is going to have a chance to see, maybe that none of it even matters in the end. And it breaks my heart to say that. But if the White House is going to have a pass at it where they get to redact anything they want to, then, you know, what are we really going to get? We're not going to get much of anything in the end, which is depressing.
This report is this report is going to find its way out. You watch.
I hope so.
It's going to find its way out. At least bits and pieces of it are going to find its way out. And so now this is nothing new. Trump was like, release the report. Now he's gone 180 degrees. Is that just his
he's all over the place.
Lack of understanding? Yeah. He's all over the place on everything.
Yeah.
There's been no day-to-day consistency on anything he's said lately.
Well, it's funny. Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that specifically, because yesterday during my show, gentleman who appears on the morning show occasionally, who is a frequent caller into my show, was saying, well, wait a minute, you know what, you know, Trump said, you know, go ahead and release the report, he's got nothing to hide. And I said, no, Mike, I said, Trump has said that, yes, but he's been all over the place about this. He's been all over the place the entire time. But he's been completely inconsistent.
Yeah. So there's a lot out there. So you said that one of the other things that's going on, and then I want to get these two things out of the way before our break, because then I want to talk about my new love affair, and I want to see what you think about some things.
Okay.
So, but Trump's stability, what do you think is really going on? Do you think he's really losing it? Is he maybe starting to have a little bit of dementia or Alzheimer's? Is the pressure too much? Because I really do not think that Trump thinks he lies. I really think that he's pathological. I think he's a pathological liar.
Right.
So he really doesn't think. I think that Trump could absolutely pass a lie detector test and tell you five lies and pass them, which a pathological liar can.
Sure.
Because he lies about things he doesn't have to lie about.
So if
he's really this confused, well, now we're talking about one kind of cognitive stability. If he's a pathological liar, which, you know, sometimes I think needs to be on a job description for any politician in Washington, but, you know, or it seems that way. But if he is really a pathological liar and doesn't know when he's lying and he's not lying, that's another issue. And of course, we've kicked the word narcissist around since, since day one. I mean, they probably listed it on his birth bracelet that he shows those tendencies. So which do you think it is?
I don't know. Well, here's the thing. So there's a couple things going on here, I think. As far as the lying, I don't know that it's that there's really a binary choice here. I think it might be a combination of both. I think you might be right that he's pathological and doesn't know that he's lying. But I also suspect that sometimes he does know that he's lying. And I made a comment about this on the Matt Connerton Unleashed Facebook page, where essentially I said, I shared out the clip of him claiming that wind turbines cause cancer and they kill birds and this and that. And he just, the wind turbines causing cancer thing. Oh, and he claims that, you can't use any electricity if the wind doesn't blow that day. And so he just makes this stuff up. I don't know that I think he does know that he's lying in an instance like that. And what I said on Facebook is, I said, if you're a Trump supporter, I said, hate to break it to you, but he lies to you because he knows that his base will believe anything he says. So, I use the example, if Trump claimed that NASA had just given him a report that the moon is in fact made out of Velveeta, within 24 hours, you could do a flash poll of Republicans who would say in the poll, 87% of them now believe the moon is in fact made of Velveeta because daddy said so. And whatever daddy says is obviously true as far as they're concerned, because they are so in love with him and so unquestioning of him. It's a level of devotion that Ronald Reagan, the patron saint of conservatism, would have been envious of, right? So I think he does lie deliberately in some instances because he knows he can say literally anything and his base will believe him, because he doesn't respect his base. He exploits them and their devotion to him. He just exploits them. So I think sometimes there may be instances where he is pathological. But I think sometimes he knows exactly what he's doing and he's just being cynical and exploitive. However, having said all that, I do think there's something else going on cognitively. And specifically the clip of him where he's trying to say the word origins and it comes out oranges. He says it once and then he says it again. And then the third time he gets it right, which maybe is what gave him the confidence to take a fourth pass at it. And then on the fourth time he says oranges again. But the thing is, too, if you watch that clip carefully, and this is important, if you watch that clip very carefully, it's either the first or the second time he says it, his facial expression changes. It's subtle, but it's in his face. He knows he's making a mistake, and he's trying to correct it and get to the right pronunciation of the word or get to the right word, period. And he's struggling. And he knows something is wrong. In that moment, he knows something is wrong. He's trying to correct it, but he's having difficulty correcting it. Now, a normal person makes mistakes all the time. I make mistakes all the time. I mispronounce things. I use the wrong word. But if I realize it in the moment, it's easy to correct it. He was having difficulty even correcting himself when he – so there's something – I do believe, not to be an, armchair – neurologist or anything, I do believe there is something genuinely wrong, and he is slipping cognitively.
We will be right back with Matt Connerton Unleashed here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at AscendingHearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Time. This is our first Thursday of the month, so that means that Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed and I are kind of checking out what's going on in the world and hopefully somewhere along the way giving it a spiritual perspective, but not always. But then again, everything is a spiritual perspective if you choose to make it so. So, Matt, we were talking about cognitive stability. You know, there's a lot of different conversations going on about there. I find it funny that Senator Grassley from Ohio, on his whole thing about wind turbines cause cancer, was idiotic. I mean, his own party is like, there are members of his own party that I think probably could put in tongue rings because they bit such holes in their tongue, and they're having a harder and harder time doing that. Because as he goes down the idiot path, he's going to lose the independence because he doesn't have them mesmerized. And there are more attacks that are happening that, you know, that some of these guys are saying, if I don't speak up, I may not get reelected. Do you have any idea how much of the electoral, how much of the Senate is up for re-election in 2020 by any chance?
I don't know offhand, no. But I think most Republicans are generally, you know, it's funny. People kind of misframe it. I always hear people say, oh, why are they so afraid of Trump? And it's like, no, it's not that they're afraid of Trump. It's that they're afraid of his base because, you know, we've seen time and time again. I mean, you know, he just has such a powerful hold on them. And, you know, it doesn't matter how popular a Republican may be. If you know, if they're not with Trump, you know, forget it. The base will choose Trump over anyone. Grassley, I assume, either isn't up for reelection anytime soon or at his age, he may be planning to retire soon. I'm not sure. He was very blunt in his comments about what Trump said about wind turbines. And that's actually something Chuck Grassley, to his credit for a Republican, has done some positive things in terms of renewable energy, which is great. So hopefully he continues to speak out. But I guarantee you there are people in Iowa right now who are very annoyed at Chuck Grassley for daring to say anything negative about Trump and what he said, because I guarantee you there are Republicans in Iowa right now, Grassley's own constituents, who now believe that, yes, wind turbines cause cancer because, you know, that's what Trump said. So it must be true. It's remarkable. I mean, it really is. I've never seen, I mean, just the the mass hypnosis, the mind control that Trump has pulled off here, you know, for a guy who's not very bright, seemingly, he's actually pulled off something pretty remarkable. I mean, I'm not kidding. Like, I'm not being hyperbolic about it either. Like, when I say Reagan would be envious, and I mean, and it used to be, it was very much the party of Reagan, you know, Saint Reagan. If you notice that ever since Trump's ascendancy, they don't talk about Reagan anymore. For the first time, they don't talk about Reagan anymore. Have you ever noticed that? It used to be every Republican candidate running for any level of office would at various times talk about how much they loved Reagan, and they were always evoking the name of Reagan. And no one does that anymore. It's like Trump came along and finally he was the one guy who was able to chase away the ghost of Ronald Reagan, because it's Trump's party now. Completely. Yeah.
So there is an interesting thing to share about this. And I do agree that he's exercised the Reagan ghost. He has done what Reagan did, which is really, sold the pig in a poke about cutting the taxes on the wealthy will increase the cash flow. because that was a Reagan thing. But in 2020, there are 34 seats that are open in the Senate.
Oh, that is more than I would have guessed. Wow, I had no idea.
Yep. Six are dark blue, five are lighter blue. There are six that are right on the go either pinkish, and 10 that are in a solid red.
Okay.
So there are seven that lean Republican but have converted, and then there are three that lean Republican and seven that are likely and 10 that are there. The Senate only has to pick up three of those and hold on to everything that they have. And there are three that are listed as a toss up right now. So there is a potential that the Senate could be taken back in 2020. And I just want to put that out there, so don't think that we can't make a change. And again, you know, this is I try to look at what the person is saying and what's going on. And do I agree with their policies? But I cannot in good conscience ever vote for anybody that rubber stamped some of the crap that Trump pulled.
Sure.
I just can't.
Right.
It means that there's no interest in there's nothing about an interest in what's best for the common person.
Right.
So, his polarization is working well. It will be interesting to see how well it works against him, both in the presidential and in the Senate. Of course,
mm-hmm.
Could you imagine, just fantasize for a second, Senate goes strongly Democrat, House goes strongly Democrat, and Trump gets reelected. What do you think happens?
Well, I mean, I think Trump would have to figure out how to work with Democrats. He might at that point become less insulting and try to actually be the deal maker that he claimed to be, because he would have no choice at that point. He would have nowhere to go. But I don't know that he'd care that much anyway, to be honest with you. Here's my theory. I think Trump would like to get reelected, not because he would necessarily care that much about accomplishing anything in his second term. I think he would like to be reelected to avoid indictment by the state attorney general in New York. But once he gets in there for that second term, you know, he might be a lot less motivated. I mean, right now he has to look like he's accomplished a lot and he has to constantly brag about all of it and whatnot because he has to make sure that he gets reelected. And by the way,
if he survives the Mueller report and the aftermath, and, you know, of course, they're trying to make sure, you know, there are forces that are trying to make sure that he does, and if the economy holds, and the economy, you know, there's a lot of good things there. I don't give him any particular credit for it, but if the economy holds and he survives Mueller, I think he wins a second term. And if he wins a second term, you know, good day for him. He can avoid probably for at least another 4 years ending up in prison.
So I'm going to shift the basis of the conversation because I don't want to have nightmares tonight. of course, you know, I could see him get elected in the second term. And if he had a Democratic Senate and a Democratic Congress, decide he's going to switch parties and become Democratic. That would be a Trump thing to do.
I don't know. I don't quite see that, but that would be interesting.
Oh, come on. That would be the absolute showman of the century. Oh, I'm
it would be
the president of whoever's in power.
that would be something. That would be something.
Yeah. You can't unelect
That's
him.
True. It would be a first, you know, in American history, yeah.
So, speaking of that, have you been looking at the candidates coming up, and what do you think of them? And have you found anybody that you go, this is somebody I could get behind?
Not particularly. There's nobody I've been excited about. What do we have? I think it's 174 Democrats that have announced. I'm kidding, of course. I'm exaggerating, but. I mean, there's nobody in particular that stands out to me. I did talk on my show today a lot about Joe Biden and his issues. I've always kind of liked Joe Biden, but he's got a problem. I did kind of express some concerns about Kamala Harris. She's not someone I particularly trust. But no, nobody really lights my fire yet. How about you?
Yeah, I was the operative, and it hasn't lessened. I just found somebody that I felt more in alignment with. And so, first of all, I want to put this in not a electability as in who I can get behind and then talk about electability. Because I think that too often we dismiss people that might be really good because we have decided they are unelectable. And mm-hmm. So, I mean, I liked Elizabeth Warren. I thought that she, you know, went and did some hard fighting and that she really had the best interest of the American people. And I think that she's feisty. And of course, I'm a big fan that if we could find the right woman, that I'd like to have a woman in the White House.
Sure.
But I have started this new love affair with Pete Buttigieg.
Oh, really, he's interesting.
He has come up way up. He's like third or fourth in the Google searches now. He's raised the money to be on the stage. He's got his 65,000 individual contributors. He's raised over $7 million.
Wow.
He's a force to be reckoned with. I'll be honest. Some people OD on the Game of Thrones. I've been ODing on, Mayor Pete's interviews.
Yeah.
The last couple of days.
I was just going to ask, Kevin, are you concerned at all that he's too young? He's only 37, I believe.
He's only 37. No, I'm not. And you know what? He addresses that issue so well. Because he talks about the decisions we're making now are the decisions that the millennials are going to pay the price for. They're going to pay the price for ignoring climate change. That bill is going to come due on their watch.
Right.
And they're going to pay the price for the derisive kind of politics that we've fallen into and the politicalization of the Supreme Court. They're paying the prices for these things.
And that, you know, and he said, and I love it. You really need to watch some of these videos because he's really articulate and he's thought everything through. And though he is a liberal, he's also, you know, he's a liberal, but he's also kind of a centrist in his own way. I mean, he has a liberal agenda, but, you know, he said, you know, he's had more executive running experience of running a government, you know, South Bend, 100,000 people, $300 million mm-hmm. budget, a ton, you know, but he has run that town. And when he became mayor, that town was number 8 on the 10 towns that are going to die in the next decade list. Dying cities in America. It was number 8.
Yeah.
And he has overhauled it. He's improved joblessness. He's improved income. He's improved cooperation. He, you know, and he says, you know, he has more government experience of running a government. It's a city government, but he runs it. He has no city manager. He says, everything comes to me. There's a pothole problem that comes to me. There is a, you know, an arrest that is racial, that has a racial issue to it. It might be motivated. His town is 45% people of color. You know, and he talks about it. He says, I have more management experience than either Trump or Pence does.
Yeah.
Says, everybody thinks you should go to the House of Reps, that you should go to the Senate, that that's the pathway. But what do you manage in the Senate? What do you manage in the House of Reps? How does that make you able to manage something like a government with all the stuff? And so he's interesting. Yes, he's 37. I mean, how old was Kennedy when he got elected? 40, I think.
I thought it was closer to 45, but you might be right.
I'm not sure. So we'll be right back, and we're gonna continue to talk a little bit more about Mayor Pete and why I think he's somebody to watch here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
The Real Conscious Connection, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show, where we are talking about politics this week. We do that the first Thursday of the month. We kind of talk about what's going on in the world, and oftentimes it leads us to politics. I'm here with Matt Connaughton from Matt Connaughton Unleashed, and I realize, bad Dr. Kevin, you can call in and be part of this conversation at 202 202- 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. So I looked up a little piece of information. The youngest president we've had so far was Theodore Roosevelt. He was 42 years old.
Okay.
John F. Kennedy was 43. If Pete got elected, he would take office and be 39.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, I know. And Bill Clinton, I think, was he 45, I think?
46.
So 46. And Obama was right in that range, too. Yeah.
Yeah. The Ulysses S. Grant was 46. So, you know, we've kind of created Barack Obama was 47. Cleveland was 47. Pierce was 48. So we have 10 presidents that were under the age of 50, between 42 and 50. The guy would be 39. He became the mayor of South Bend when he was 29. He served in Afghanistan. He described himself initially as a policy hawk, but then realized that one of the real powers of people like mayors in cities and then presidents in countries is their ability to heal, to bring people together, to, you know, he said that, you know, he was uncomfortable initially when at 29 as mayor, when he, you know, went to check out a situation where there was a violent death. And he got there, and then the family showed up, and he tells the story. He goes, I'm thinking, what can I say? I'm not a grief counselor. I don't know what to do. And then I realized the fact that I was there saying me, the mayor, cares about this violent death was healing just in me being there.
Wow.
Just in me reassuring that this wasn't okay. I mean, this is why I'm getting excited about this guy, is he's got very clear, very, very clear things, and he says, and I agree with him, the biggest mistake the Democratic Party made in the last election was they made it too much about don't elect Trump.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want Trump. You don't want Trump. You don't want Trump. He goes, and they didn't focus enough on what are we going to do to change the system. And, you know, so, and in his, I think it was his second election to be mayor, as the process started, he decided to come out. Because he's gay and he's married and he's got a husband. And, you know, and he said, you know, here I am in a conservative state. The governor was Mike Pence. I'm running and I just decide that I feel like I am not being in full integrity. I come out and he won his election by 80% after coming out because people said, you've done so much good for the city. We don't care who you go home to. And
right,
this is
right.
In the Midwest. So,
yeah.
You know, he doesn't apologize for anything. He makes a case and he's got his, this is what we need to do. And you may or may not agree with it, but I haven't seen him ever in watching probably 12 different interviews. I have not seen him dodge one single question. In fact, I've heard three or four commentators, and he was the first one to go on Fox to be interviewed. I've heard three or four commentators say, oh, my God, you actually answered our questions. We don't expect that from politicians.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
And yeah, you got to check out some of his stuff. And, you know, what I think he's right. I think that we need to have somebody younger in charge. And, you know, he brought up some stuff that I found interesting. He goes, 80% of Americans believe we should have some kind of background checks for guns. This is not inconsistent with the Second Amendment. But the words get twisted. 80% or 85% or something of Americans think that everybody should have health care. So we have 85%
right.
of people that agree on centrist kind of decisions. We're not trying to take away your guns.
Yeah.
We're trying to keep you safe by having reasonable and sensible things in place. And Washington can't get it done. When you have 80
right.
or 85, you know, people saying, yes, everybody should have health care. Yes, we should have universal, you know, background checks. there should be some of these things in place. But Washington can't get it done. It tells you how out of sync. And he said this two or three times, and I love it. He goes, I think Congress should be more interested in being more like well-run cities than mayors should be interested in being like Congress, because Congress is broken.
Right.
He said, could you imagine being as a mayor saying, oh, yeah, we're not going to, you know, we're shutting the city down. You're not going to get your snow plowed. You're not going to get your sewers run. You're not going to get your water delivered. No. We're going to have a spec. You could not do that as a mayor.
Right. Of course. Of course.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, so is he too young? I don't think so. If you listen to this man, I mean, he graduated from Harvard. He was a Rhodes Scholar, went to Oxford, served in the military, and became mayor at 29 and has been mayor for 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, that's a hell of a lot more experience than Trump had in government before he got elected.
Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, he's got a, you know, that's a pretty good resume. So
he does call about that. That is a low bar, though, to overcome.
Well, that's also true.
So there's a couple of things that I want to talk about that, you know, I listened to him bring up. And he, again, his views are very clear, and I've not found myself out of line with any of them yet, which is probably why I'm so excited. In his way to articulate them, which is non-shit show aggressive.
Yeah.
He did an interview with Chris Wallace, and Chris Wallace was, like, respectful. How often does that happen?
What? Oh, I got to stick up for Chris Wallace a little bit there. I think that there are a couple of people, probably not more than a couple of people at Fox News who I think actually care about journalism, and one of them is Chris Wallace. I think Chris Wallace does a pretty good job.
Okay. Fair game. Yeah. You've probably watched him more than I have. You know,
the other one is Shepard Smith, by the way. I think Shep Smith actually cares about journalism. They're probably the only ones.
Too. I would agree. I agree about Shep. I've run across some of the Shep Smith stuff, and he'll call out anybody, whether,
yes,
you know, no matter what the party is, if he thinks that they're digging it. So have you heard about this idea about expanding the Supreme Court to 15?
Is this a recent suggestion that someone has made? Because I hear this occasionally. But, I was just going to say, I occasionally hear different ideas about expanding the court, but I haven't heard anything too recent.
So three of the things that stood out, and I'll be interested to get your feedback, is he talks about expanding the court. And what he says is that, you know, one of the things that he's looked at would be to make the court less political by five justices get put in place by the Democrats, five get put in by the Republicans, and the last five have to be appointed by a unanimous agreement of the 10. And that would take the politics out.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's an interesting idea.
And it wouldn't have to be done by constitutional amendment.
Right.
I feel like you had something else to say, Matt. I don't want to cut you off.
No, I'm just, I mean, it seems like, it sounds like something that probably would never actually happen. But it's an interesting idea. I don't object to it out of hand.
You know, it's interesting. If this guy got the Democratic nomination, And, you know, I have to say it, and I don't have anything personally against Biden or Sanders, but I really don't think we need another 70-year-old white man in the White House. I'm done with them.
Right.
I am. I think we have to have younger blood. I think we have to have newer ideas and people that are more in touch. And the millennials are now the largest block of voters, which is something
right.
that could really work in his favor.
Right.
But, you know, if perchance in some version of reality, he got elected and had a full Democratic House and Senate, he could make that happen.
Yeah.
He could absolutely make it happen. He also talks about, you know, everybody's screaming about Medicare for all. And his idea, which I really like, and I want to get your feedback on it, is he calls it Medicare for all who want it. He thinks that the road should be to offer Medicare on the public exchange that people can choose that's the kind of insurance that they want, that we're not about – he's not about eliminating private insurance companies. He's about making it more competitive and thinks that over the long haul that more people will end up going to the Medicare system, which will give it more power to negotiate and keep prices reasonable. He said, but I
right.
know
and
people
I think,
say Medicaid for all. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that's a reasonable position because I know that there are some, like Bernie Sanders, who is saying, you know, let's just get rid of the insurance companies, which I think is not only too heavy a lift, you're never going to do that, but I don't think that should happen. And I like the, you know, the Medicare for those who want it. It's really just another version of, you know, when they were doing the Affordable Care Act, there was a lot of talk about, you know, let's have a public option. And of course that wasn't going to that was too heavy a lift to include a public option at the time, but that sounds like the same concept, and which I think makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, he says he's a progressive liberal, but when he presents his ideas, they're so logical, and I know voters aren't all logical. But he really has a way of getting past, you know, he talks about, you know, these charged words and that people don't actually understand. He's pointed out a few times that, you know, everybody's screaming socialist now as the, you know, witch hunting word, like it's the 50s. And that, you know, and he said, first of all, the idea of Obamacare came out of the Heritage Foundation, which was a conservative group. It was first done by
right.
a Republican governor, and everybody thought it was great. But as soon as the Democrats wanted to do it, it became socialist. And he said, and this
yeah.
is the way – this is all about power. This has nothing to do with what's best for the American people.
Well, that's something and by the way, that's something I've been kind of ranting about on my show, too. Anyway, this weird discussion, this debate about this argument we're having in the country about socialism versus capitalism, like it's an either or binary choice. And it's really strange to me. We already have it's a mixed economy. We already have both socialism and capitalism, and they coexist. And it's always been that way, and it always will be that way. And it's really just a matter of, you know, do we add more of one and less of the other? But the whole debate is very strange to me.
You know, one of the things that I heard, and like you can tell, I'm clearly very excited about this guy. And again, I've been binging the last couple of days, listening to a lot of different interviews to see, is he consistent? Is he saying the same thing? Is he answering all the questions? What new questions are coming up? I watched the one he did at St. Anselm's in Manchester. That's online when he was there speaking. You know, all sorts of different kinds of interviewers from Fox to MSM. So, you know, but one of the things he pointed out is, and I liked this way of looking at it, it isn't about capitalism and democracy versus, you know, socialism. It's about
mm-hmm.
we are capitalist. He likes the capitalist. He thinks capitalist is great as long as it's done right within democracy values. And that it's the democracy that needs to make sure that the values are being adhered to. And that's not by having runaway capitalism.
Right, right. Yeah, agreed.
You know.
Yeah, it sounds like he's talking my language. Yeah.
It does. I think if you listen to some of his interviews, you'd be surprised. I probably have a snowball's chance in Hague's. But I'm thinking about trying to reach out to see if I can get him to come on this show. Probably won't. I don't know that I have the demographics or the numbers, but I am sure as hell going to try. And maybe he'll find an hour he can squeeze in. If he does, I'm going to try to reach out. If he does, if I can get him to come on, then I will also let you know to see if you want to be on that show with me as well.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Worst thing he can do is say, no, he doesn't have the time.
That's right.
So go check that out. I look forward to hearing from you privately what you think after you check out some of the other stuff. You've got some great ideas. And this is the end of the Dr. Kevin Show for the first Wednesday, first Thursday. in April with Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed. Matt, thank you for coming as always.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.